It's a system of health where you're looking at mind, body, spirit, and understanding from a holistic perspective what an individual person needs for optimal health.
You've just tuned into Rebel Wellness Podcast, your resource for realigning and revitalizing your health and well-being. I'm your host, Kaylee, also known as Coach Kales. I'm a holistic health educator, certified nutritionist, and fitness professional of nearly a decade. I'm stoked to have you with us. You just joined a community of amazing souls who are ready to break free from the confines of the often outdated and confusing health advice all around us. Living in a world overwhelmed by quick fix diets and unrealistic beauty and body standards, us rebels stand for change. If you're like me, you're exhausted with the confusion and polarization plaguing the social media health scene. My mission is to empower you to step beyond today's diet culture. Adopt a holistic health approach paired with the foundations of science for lasting, well-rounded wellness. Through teaching you how to tune in and embrace your mind, body, and soul, we'll reject one-size-fits-all solutions, realigning you on a better path that honors your unique needs and values. With new episodes weekly, this podcast is your sanctuary for deep wellness exploration, featuring expert advice, real life stories, and a true commitment to your growth. Your journey to better health and simplicity in life begins now. Let's jump right in. What's up, rebels? Welcome back to another Be a Rebel interview. Today is a really extra special episode, actually, because I get to sit down with somebody who has been on both sides of the wellness journey, first as one of my clients and then now as a healer in her own practice, which I'm really excited to have her share her amazing story with you guys, because I think it's something that might resonate with at least some of you. If anything, it's definitely going to inspire some of you, that's for sure. So a few years ago, I had the privilege to coach Netta through strength training. We talked a lot of lifestyle nutrition and kind of, you know, dove into a lot of the mindset work around body image, you know, stuff that a lot of us females need to have as far as discussions go with each other, because in a world like today, we don't get these opportunities quite the same as far as, you know, talking about like all the things that you don't need to accept when it comes to body image and different decades of life, different generations. We've all had different body images and narratives around food kind of pushed on us. So Netta and I in today's conversation talk a lot about that and some of the amazing breakthroughs she had on her own and through working together, talking about food and, you know, female just vitality in general from a different lens. And so several years back when Netta and I were training together, I could always see she had this amazing passion for the more holistic side of wellness. And she was always eager to explore the deeper connections between mind and body and spirit. And she always talked about, you know, her fascination with yoga nidra and Ayurvedic medicine in general. And it was pretty clear that she was going to continue down that path to explore it more. And, you know, she signed up for classes and, you know, really took control of the path that she wanted to take. And is super inspiring even for me to see her and this journey that she's been on. And so I really wanted to have her on the show today, not only because I don't know a whole ton about the depths of Ayurvedic medicine, even though it is easily one of the most time-tested approaches to wellness from a science-backed community, that, you know, it really aligns with not only my philosophy around food and movement and mindset, but also hers. And so I really wanted her to share her perspective and her story so far and this new venture that she's gone on. So Netta's the founder of Shakuri Wellness. She guides others to rediscover their inner vitality and live in alignment with their true nature through Ayurveda, yoga nidra, and a lot of other restorative practices. So in this conversation today, you can expect to hear a little bit about her journey and her transformation as it came through the last several years of her life. You know, she is somebody who's in a different chapter that, you know, she really wanted to decide, do I stay in this corporate law job or do I dive into something that I'm really passionate about? And I think that it can resonate with any of us that sometimes we have followed a path that, you know, maybe our parents really wanted for us, or it was very common to have our peers be like, oh, you know, you need to be in this position or that position. And you don't always get to really embrace what really speaks to your soul. So this is a really amazing conversation today because we get to talk about how she really cast aside the early pressures of just in life to kind of fit in a more a box that, you know, wasn't something that was really true to her soul. And so now she's really taking the reins and doing that with Ayurvedic medicine. And I'm really proud of her. And this is a great conversation where she kind of can help you, you know, decide for yourself. Maybe there's something, a different career path that you want to take. And so I really hope that you're inspired by today's conversation. And I hope that if you've ever felt the pull to shift in your life in a big way and you weren't sure where to start, this episode is exactly for you. So I hope you guys enjoy today's episode, and I'd love to hear your feedback at the end. And if you would like to connect with Netta, as always, check out the show notes. All right, let's dive into this conversation. So today's conversation, you know, we are going to be discussing all of the ins and outs of Ayurvedic medicine, and you were the first person that came to my mind on this because this has been kind of your passion, and I don't want to say passion project, but kind of, right, in a way, especially,
yeah.
Some people minimize the phrase passion project. I'm like, it shouldn't be. And so I really want to kind of dive into that with you today, because I know for me, you know, there's a lot that I would love to learn, and there's a lot that, you know, is to learn about it. But before we go into it, I know you had a little something you wanted to start today's episode with.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And I'm excited to share all the things that I've kind of been journeying through with Ayurveda and other things as well. But I wanted to first just give us a moment to drop in and center and ground a little bit. I'm sure that you, just like me and probably most of our listeners, feel a little bit like they're pulled away in so many different directions. And so it's nice to kind of take a moment to ground and breathe. So just a little brief meditation to kind of get us into that space before we chat. Perfect. So if it's comfortable for you to close your eyes, I would request that you close your eyes. You can be in any position that you would like. If sitting is comfortable for you, please sit. If you want to lay down, lay down. Just allowing yourself to get comfortable so that you can let go and release a little bit as we journey through this little practice. So just kind of starting by feeling the parts of your body that are touching the ground or the earth or the support beneath you, the support around you. And as you do that, taking 3 deep inhales and 3 deep exhales. As we tune in to our bodies, let's go ahead and focus on releasing any tension that may exist in the body. So starting maybe with the eyebrows, softening the eyebrows, the space between the eyebrows, releasing any tension we may be holding. Softening the eyes, the cheeks, releasing any tension you're holding in your jaw. Moving down to your neck, shoulders, relaxing your arms, letting go of any tension you're holding in your midsection, your navel, your hips. Allowing the legs to relax. And releasing any tension you're holding in your feet. As you breathe, on each exhale, sense that your body becomes heavier and releases into the support beneath you. Trust that whatever that support beneath you is, can hold you, can hold whatever it is that you're carrying. As you further soften into your body, notice how on your inhale, your navel rises, and on your exhale, your navel settles. Be with this breath and with this awareness for 5 inhales and 5 exhales. As you breathe, perhaps you notice on your exhale, there's space. Maybe there's a pause after you exhale. Give yourself permission to be in that space, to be still, before you take your next breath. Welcoming yourself back to your body, perhaps noticing any sounds in your environment, the air on your skin. Whenever you are ready, slowly opening your eyes and welcoming yourself back.
That was very relaxing. I need more of that in my life.
Oh, good. Yeah, you know, sometimes it just takes a few minutes, right? And I know it's hard in our busy world and our busy lives to even give us those few minutes, but it really, really is imperative, in my opinion, to do that. Our nervous systems are so taxed. And so just giving our body a little bit of time, it could be 1 minute, it could be 3 breaths, anything that you can find time for and find space for.
That was when I ran a women's mindset workshop with my old colleague Sasha for a few years back in the day. We started every session with a meditation, and it was always interesting from the beginning to the end, where people would either be super uncomfortable, like just sitting there, even just for 5 minutes, and or would be like, how was that already 5 minutes? Like, I need more rest. Yeah. You know, and so it's just a totally a testament to like what you're just saying about how like nowadays we're just like bam, 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 or, you know, just constantly pulled different directions. And calming your nervous system is simple, but intentional, you know. So I'm so glad that you started our chat today with that. But with that put in place there for a little bit of a dose of Ayurveda early on, it's like, would that be considered more yoga nidra? Is that like part of what you do in yoga nidra?
I would consider that just kind of a more basic meditation. So with the yoga nidra, which is actually what kind of started me on the path of wellness in the way that I've been on it in the last couple of years, studying it, practicing it more in depth. Yoga nidra is a practice of withdrawal of the senses. So there's a term called pratyahara in Sanskrit, and we're basically going through a process, and there are different schools with different techniques. I studied the Himalayan technique practice, but you're essentially going through the various layers in your body in a very intentional way through cues that you're receiving, so that you can enter this layer that's known as the bliss layer, Anandamaya Kosha, as it's called. And that's really where your body is completely relaxed. You are in a deep sleep state, even though maybe you're not actually sleeping the way we know sleep to be. But it's where your nervous system is restoring. It's a really, really beautiful space to be in from a creative perspective, from a spiritual perspective. There's said to be enlightenment that comes from being in that space, but like most things, it's a practice and you're not always getting that. But the yoga nidra practice is really, really special in so many ways, and there's so much to it. It could be a whole episode in itself.
Yeah. Totally, yes. We'll have to have you back on for that, because I know even the studio out here in Monterey, they offer that. It's always an evening session, so that makes a lot of sense. But I know that there's much more that I was always curious about with that, so we will have to circle back to that. But let's dive into a little bit of first your kind of story with, you know, how you got into Ayurvedic medicine, you know, where you've been in the previous chapters of your life and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I would say that I always had a deep connection with nature, just having grown up in the mountains in Santa Cruz, surrounded by redwoods. And there was definitely something inherently within me that I think always found nature and nature-y things very interesting. And then there was this external input and information that I would receive from parents or culture or larger society as far as what you're supposed to do in your life. And that sent me on a path to going into law as my career. And I always had kind of this creative energy that I liked to explore. And so that was an important thing for me to kind of maintain, even while I was in law school and working as a lawyer. But I found that as time went on and as I was in that career for now 15 plus years, 20 years in the legal profession generally, I was just not feeling aligned with myself. I did really well and I did all the things, as they say. I did all the jobs and explored multiple kind of different avenues of being a lawyer. But ultimately, I got to a place where I just kept feeling this tug. And it was during this kind of 5-6 year stretch of my life, when COVID started, that all these things in my life just started kind of pulling so hard at me and causing me to just not feel like myself. And ultimately, I call them karmic challenges. They became so strong that I felt compelled to just say stop. whether it was a toxic relationship that I was in for many, many years, or the death of my father, or the stresses of a very, very demanding career. At that time, I was at the height of it. It just felt like I couldn't ignore that voice any longer. And I was so scared, but my body and my mind just weren't functioning at a level that I could even maintain those things anymore. So it really was kind of less of a nudge by the universe, more of a like big slap in the butt. Like, girl, exactly. No.
Like, no more. No, yeah, more. Exactly. Like, stop ignoring me.
Yeah. So, and that process, of course, did not happen overnight. It was a very, very challenging process of many, many years to finally get to the point where everything had been torched intentionally. Relationships, you know, dissolved, and my career dissolved again, all because I finally just decided that enough is enough and I don't want to do this anymore. There's more and I want to learn and I want to explore what that is and I want to feel better. You know, you take your health, I think, for granted and your wellness for granted sometimes in life. And having always been an active person, doing a lot of different things, it was interesting to be in a state where I just wasn't feeling well in my body. And so going through that journey of figuring out why and how to repair that has been the work and the practice that I've been doing the last few years, and which ultimately led me to a place where I wanted to share that with others, because it's not an easy process. And to kind of figure it out on your own, I think, sure, that's great and there's something to that, but it would be really nice to have kind of a blueprint to work off of for people, which I've developed through my own journey and the things that I've been studying all these years.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I feel like I remember kind of when we were working together, like all those little conversations, and it was a lot of like the usual conversation that all of us, especially females, have, where it's like, am I doing the right thing? I want to people please, or something like that, you know, like, or like, why does my body feel this way? I don't trust it, but, you know, like, we have to like kind of come back to ourselves. And it was definitely like a whole process that, you know, is messy and it's not fun. And I remember us talking about that a lot with like fueling yourself enough, you know, and trying to navigate like figuring that out. And it's like super uncomfortable when a lot of our life we've maybe underate, or some people have overeaten most of their life. And when you're honing in on what your individual body really needs, it's like you're basically abandoning all these truths that you used to have for yourself, or identities, you know. So yeah, no, I've loved watching that also, and or being nearby, you know.
Yeah, and you've been such a big part of that. When we first met, I was in a state where I really wanted to feel strong in a different way, and I wanted to kind of understand my body a little bit more. And you were so significant in that journey for me, strength training in a way that I had never strength trained before, where I felt like I was getting guidance and information, not just the actual strength training itself, but nutritional guidance and just general wellness guidance, and like, go get these tests done. And it's like, somehow, some way, we don't learn, most of us, as women in particular, I feel like, how to listen to our bodies and how to understand our unique individual bodies, right? So there are so many things out there that I feel like is like, oh, eat this or do this or move like this. And it's like, that doesn't work for every woman or every person. And we can get into the reason why that's so significant with Ayurveda, but it was such an instrumental part of my journey and my healing to have you there with me as I was working through some of these really challenging things, food related also. You know, I think at one point it was like, you need to eat 2 to 3 times more than you're eating. And I was like, whoa, oh my God. But yeah, it's like nobody told me that you need this much protein with every meal, especially for somebody who's active, which, you know, that's critical. You're literally depleting your body of nutrients and nourishment that it so desperately needs. So yeah, that was really, really enlightening and really helpful to my journey. And still is. I still strength train to this day.
Good. That's what I love to hear at the end of the day. It's good.
Yeah. Not just I'm still that. Eating all that protein. Good.
And hopefully it's digesting more easily now at this point.
Yes. Yeah. There's some help in that department.
That's good. Yeah. That's one of those other things too that's very challenging. Is like when you are learning or like coaching people to kind of relearn those cues and whatnot, like so many, especially like, you know, we've talked about it in the past about how, you know, when you go plant-based, you know, you stop making a lot of those enzymes, and then it takes quite a while to kind of bring those back into play if you start to reincorporate, you know, plant proteins, or I mean animal proteins. So like those little things are tough because a lot of times people are just like, oh, but my stomach hurts. And so that means it's bad. And it's like, not always, you know, there's nuance. So yeah, but I would say too, it was one of my favorite little things. I don't know if I've ever told you, but training together to like towards the end, seeing how strong you could get on your hip thrusts and stuff. It was always just so fun because like you responded so quickly to strength, and it would for my listeners out there, I also train her sister, and not in a bad way. It was always so funny because then they would be like trying to beat each other out about strength, and like Netta, like, you know, Netta started like 2 years behind her sister, and she was like, all right, now I'm at her PR. It's like, then her sister would be like, I need to beat that PR. But it was really fun. It was
like, I guess I don't think I'm competitive by nature, but it was fun to just kind of relate to each other as well in that way. It was like a little game we were playing.
Totally. Yeah. Which is a good way to have some level of sort of fun accountability with strength. Cause I mean, there's always sister competition, like in not a unhealthy way sometimes. I mean, there's for sure unhealthy, but I would say for you guys, it was more of a healthy way because obviously, I mean, it's with strength, but also like it wasn't in a way where you guys were like crap talking each other or something like that.
No, not at all. It was like, get it, girl. Like, yeah.
I mean, you were pushing each other like unintentionally. Maybe it was intentional though.
Yeah. I don't know.
It was fun though. I thought that was kind of a fun thing. I love your story because it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of people should not feel kind of barred by, you know, the chapter you're in life, or if you did a career to quote unquote the full extent, you know, and you coming into this next decade of your life and exploring what really aligns with you and your soul, how do you feel like that has empowered your health, you know, as you went through kind of that dark section where it was everything was flaring up?
Yeah, it's such a great question. I think the most helpful thing for me has been to just trust myself, and to know that I have everything that I need within me to heal and be well. And that doesn't mean, obviously, I'm not utilizing assistance externally, but if I really listen to myself, I'll know what I need. And sometimes that takes time, and sometimes it takes a little bit of trial and error, but that process in itself is giving me what I need. So I think I got to a point where, you know, I've never really been a huge fan of Western medicine or doctors, just from personal experience. But even some of the naturopathic doctors and homeopathic doctors that I've worked with, it just ultimately felt for me like no one's ever going to be as invested in my health as I can be if I want to be. And I'm not going to get the answers that I need from other people. I'm going to get the answers that I need from listening to myself and getting guidance from other people, but no one's going to understand my body and my mind and my spirit the way that I do. And I just feel like so often we are so busy in our lives that it's hard for us to do the work internally and to do the work for ourselves. But it is the ultimate act of self-love and self-care. And the more that we can do that hard work, because it is hard, it's much easier to take a pill or have somebody tell us, here, this is exactly what you need. But I don't know, for me, 9 times out of 10, that didn't work. And so it's really just kind of understanding, what is my internal landscape like and what does it need? And that's a daily practice, which again is one of the things that makes it challenging. So I would say that trust has just been the biggest healer for me. And within that umbrella of trust is deep, deep self-love and deep self-care. And that is also something that I feel like is hard to cultivate when the people around you or the community around you aren't doing the things that you're doing and aren't thinking the way that you're thinking about health and wellness. And that's again where I feel like having someone like you or, you know, some sort of a wellness coach or consultant with you and alongside you. Yeah, which is me now. Yes, definitely. It's such a critical part of the process because it can feel alienating sometimes and it can just feel really hard. Like there are days that you're just tired and you just want to feel better. And to understand that struggle and to have lived through that struggle, I think enables us to help people work through that. And again, that's kind of this village mentality of like, we all need people around us for different reasons. And I think you talked about this the other day as far as having like a health team. I really, really believe in that because, again, it's kind of like not one person isn't going to be able to give you all of the things that you need. It's a holistic approach. And that is holistic on a micro level, but then you also expand that out to more macro levels. And yeah, a healthcare team, a wellness team, absolutely, I think is helpful. So that was kind of a long, long answer to your question. Sorry. This is me like, you can take the girl out of the law firm, but you can't take the law firm out of the girl. I'll keep talking. Right.
Can I also have your citations? No. Yeah. No, and I think that's such a truth because you even, you know, something I did also want to kind of like talk about as we get more into the Ayurveda, but I would say a similar modern blanket term would be functional health, functional medicine. A lot of those practitioners try to do, or they encompass more of a root cause and individualized approach to wellness. And I think that, I mean, that's where I've definitely aligned with. So, and I know that we've always kind of aligned in the same area. And I think that hopefully more and more people start to encompass this and, you know, expand into like, I could do more for myself than I realize, you know, and even to like the smallest level of like, lately, the last few years, teaching a lot of my clients about their cycle and the different like chapters of your cycle through the decades and what is normal, what isn't, you know, I think even we had like conversation about this where it's like, is this normal? Okay, this has happened for 3 months now, it's not normal. But then like tuning in and being like, what did I do this month? You know, even to that level, I think is immensely empowering for feminine health in general.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you were critical to that process for me too, kind of again, going back to what I said earlier, as far as like, nobody taught me this. Nobody in my circle told me to track my cycle or why it's important. I didn't learn that anywhere. And so here I was as like a 40-year-old lady, and I was just kind of learning to pay attention to it for the first time in my life. And it just, you know, it's so critical because your cycle tells you so many things about your health. So we haven't had the education, and I'm glad that there are people like you and now me who can help ladies learn about our body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sooner better than later, because I think feeling like a lot of people kind of get into that hole of retroactive shame or something like that about like, oh, I should have known this. And it's like, okay, but you do now and we can only move forward. So here it is, you know. But so let's dive in now to a little bit more of the nitty gritty with Ayurveda. And I know one of the few main facts that I know about Ayurveda is that in Sanskrit, it translates to science of life, correct? Yes. So tell me all about what exactly is Ayurveda and...
Yeah. So I think kind of in layman's terms, it's a system of health and wellness, and it is, it's a science, where you're looking at mind, body, spirit, and understanding from a holistic perspective what an individual person needs for optimal health or wellness or balance in their lives. There's a lot to it on each of those lenses, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, but it really is kind of this science that takes all of those things as a whole and looks at them, but then also there's nuances to each kind of one of those layers and how they interplay with each other. So it's, from my perspective, one of the most holistic paths to wellness. And it's rooted in the Indian tradition from thousands of years ago. And interestingly, a lot of Western medicine has also incorporated a lot of ancient Ayurvedic principles too. So it's not like pseudoscience. It's not, you know, I think for a lot of people, if they haven't been exposed to it, it's not like woo-woo science or anything like that. It is actually rooted in tried and true practices that have been utilized by people all over the world for generations. So that's kind of super high level what it's all about. And one of the most kind of well-known components of Ayurveda is your dosha, which is your individual constitution. And that's determined through a variety of questions and observations, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual. And in doing that analysis, we uncover what your doshic constitution is. And that changes over time. It's different from when you're born to when you're an adult, just based on external factors, environmental factors, life. But basically, there's kind of three separate doshas, and we all have some percentage of each one of them. And that's where the uniqueness comes in. Like every body is just made up of a specific amount of each of these doshas. And it's, again, like so much more specific than that, but just at a high level. That kind of helps the practitioner guide the client through what is optimal for their unique constitution based on what their constitutional makeup is. Yeah. Awesome. So
yeah, can you what are the three doshas, and what's like a very like a nice summarized way of each one?
Yeah, so there are three doshas, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. And the doshas are made up of the five elements. So we have ether, air, fire, water, and earth. So Vata is made up of ether and air. And some of the kind of characteristics that are associated with Vata are cool, dry, space, light, mobile. And then the next one is Pitta. And Pitta is fire
and water.
And this is a dosha that is kind of characterized by heat, sharpness, think, you know, fire, right? Like these are kind of, again, there's so much of this that's like elemental and natural that goes into these doshas. And then you have kapha, which is fire. It's earth and water. And this one is kind of like heavy, dull, slow, oily. So it's like you're getting dense, right? When you have like water and earth elements, like it just kind of intuitively, it's like, oh, okay. Yes. That makes sense. At least it does for me. So each of us has some mix of the five elements, which make up these three doshas. So there are situations, again, where any one of these elements or doshas may present stronger in our lives. For the most part, just based on the way that we live, especially in Western society, a lot of us are dealing with vata-related issues. And that can show up as things like constipation, right? Like think dryness. It can show up emotionally as anxiety, because when you're in air and ether, you're just kind of like you're not grounded. And so there's just this like kind of loss of control or centeredness. Pittas, you know, by their nature being hot and fiery, anger, for example, is one of the emotions that comes up a lot for pittas. And then for kapha, being kind of, again, heavy, dull, lethargic sometimes, that can look like depression. And so this system kind of looks at all of these things at any given moment in time for a person and determines what do you need physically, whether it's nutritionally or movement? What do you need emotionally? And all of these things kind of get prescribed essentially on whatever it is. If you're seeing somebody weekly, the way that I practice, you look at everybody individually on a weekly basis or whatever the cadence is, and you decide, okay, based on what's going on, this is what your body is indicating. And so let's try this and see if that helps. And I just, you know, I've been studying this. It's been about a year and a half now. I've been practicing it. Components of it I've been practicing just based on some cultural things that I grew up with. But it's remarkable to see how quickly the body can adjust and adapt and give you signs that something's working or not working. And again, it requires us to tune in and listen and observe. And that's really kind of what Ayurveda is helping us do. We're really, really tuning in to all the elements in ourselves and around us to understand what is it that my body, mind, spirit needs.
So as somebody listening, I think a question somebody might ask is, in each, let's say each of those doshas are presenting the strongest at a certain time. What's an example of how you would remedy that, or like what's a like an example approach to actively working on it?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So if somebody came to me and said, you know what, I'm feeling really anxious, I'm really overwhelmed, I don't have enough time for myself, I'm feeling dehydrated, I'm constipated, I just kind of have like mental fog, lack of clarity, and I love running a lot.
I'd tell you I what would I'd say, tell them.
Okay. I would, or like, I love doing hot yoga. I would say, let's see if we can make some adjustments to this, because what your body is telling you is that your sense of groundedness is maybe not optimal because you're feeling anxious and there's lack of clarity and fogginess. You're constipated and dehydrated. So your body is telling you you're dry we need moisture. We need to preserve all these unctuous juices that exist in our bodies. And so maybe let's try oiling our food more. Maybe we use ghee because that's just like extra gooey yumminess for the body. Let's make sure that we're drinking water, enough water, but also not just plain water because that can further dehydrate us and strip us of minerals. So let's add in electrolytes. Let's keep that water warm if we can, because one of the attributes of vata is cold. And so we want to keep our bellies warm, both for digestion purposes, but also for menstruation. It's really important as women in particular that we keep our bellies and our reproductive organs warm. And so warm water. Warm womb.
All my fertility clients have been saying that. I'm like, that must be circulating on something.
I haven't heard it yet, but yes, absolutely. We want a warm womb. And then I would say let's maybe not do the hot yoga or not do it as often because you're dehydrating yourself by losing all of those liquids. And you are exhausting your body. It is quite stressful for the body to be in that sort of a physical environment. You're just heating your body up a lot. And, you know, maybe over time there's some things we could do to counterbalance that. And that's great. But initially, I would just be like, let's try and do that in moderation or stop it entirely. And running as well, let's maybe focus on something slower moving, something that'll get us grounded and centered. So maybe some yin yoga, definitely yoga nidra to just kind of let the body get into a restorative state and to further ground and center. And then, you know, it's things like, what do your mornings look like? Are you feeling like you just wake up and you're just running out the door? Again, not optimal to create balance and centeredness. So can we take even 5 minutes to just do a basic meditation or just to sit there and drink a warm cup of your favorite beverage and look outside? And then kind of a similar routine at night. How can we get you to just kind of ground and center into your evening, into your sleep, to just, again, calm the mind, calm the body? So super high level, but if somebody came kind of presenting with like more vata dominant symptoms, those are some of the things that we would do to kind of counterbalance and try to get the body to more of an equilibrium. Yeah.
I think it's kind of interesting too, thinking about like, I was reflecting on clients or people I know that kind of would land in that category. And they do tend to err towards the more is more kind of mentality. Like, I'm stretched thin and all this stuff. I need to do this hardcore workout or something, you know? And I think we've all been there for sure. Yeah. Especially when I was in my running phase, when I was like running from my problems in early college.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. I love that you brought up that exact phrase, running from your problems, because sometimes the things that we're doing are directly tied to the way that we're feeling emotionally, right? Yeah. So like running actually is tied a lot of times to like running from something. And so there is so much of that too in Ayurveda where it's like, what is the emotional need that's not being met here? Like, why are you binge eating? Why are you reaching for the ice cream or the alcohol? Nobody's saying it's bad. We don't judge anything here. We're just trying to figure out why so that we can create a more optimal system for you to work off of. And so that emotional exploration, again, challenging but extremely rewarding. And then you realize like, oh, okay, I'm craving the ice cream because I feel sad. Why do I feel sad? Because of that thing that happened to me when I was little, or that thing that somebody said to me at work the other day about my work product. These are stressors that show up in so many different ways for so many different people. And again, different people experience different results, right? And reactions to those types of things. And so that's why, again, it's so nice to have a system where we can look at you individually to understand what's going on.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that that's kind of the, I guess it kind of ties into the concept of the root cause, because it's like you're trying to really find where is the, like, where is this thing coming out of, you know? And it's like, are you growing a weed or a flower?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love kind of those references, I guess, to nature, because we are that, right? And so understanding what these things are and kind of unearthing the reasons behind it is, I think, one of the most beautiful things that we can do. But again, something that I do find most of us could use support and help and guidance
with. Yeah, yeah. And a little bit of like that kind of facilitation of that self-exploration. I think that's kind of adjacently similar to why a lot of people do have great realizations with just talk therapy, because they're finally just conversing about a thing, you know?
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But no, that's awesome. So I really love kind of getting into a little bit more of how people can see the doshas and like how they can, you know, teach you about yourself, and then how somebody else can kind of like, as for you, can help, I don't know if it's necessarily diagnose, but direct people from what you understand of like what they're presenting, because that's also kind of an eye-opening experience for an individual when they start to see them. And then later, I'm sure it's like easier to graduate and then sort of take inventory for themselves, right? Like, do you do that already on your own? Like, take inventory of like, which dosha am I kind of like experiencing today?
Yeah. So it's just been this process of becoming so kind of aware and observant and understanding like, ooh, I'm feeling really hot these days. Like, let's maybe back off of the intense kind of strength training and do something a little bit less. And little things like that, that kind of show up every day. It's just kind of like, okay, what's going on today? How do I feel? What should I be eating for how I feel? And absolutely, at any given point in time, those things can shift and change based on external factors. We're just taking in so much, whether it's physically, mentally, emotionally. And so it's like, how are we processing that? So I think one of the most beautiful things about this process and what Ayurveda and a lot of other approaches to wellness can teach us is to become empowered, right? So the idea here is not that we're working with people in perpetuity. The idea is that we are providing them with the support and the guidance for them to learn and understand for themselves. So that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, they have this kind of bookshelf that they can go to that has all the information it is that they need to optimize their health and wellness. So it's really a journey of empowering people to take their health and wellness into their own hands.
I think that's, I've landed even through my years in the wellness space, that is the only solution to long-term forward process with like the individual's health in the medical world, like today, the conventional medicine model. You know, if we don't teach people how to take care of themselves, again, you know, because we used to, it was innate, or it was part of our upbringing, and now it's gone. If we don't do that, you know, a lot of people are going to just be subjected to kind of the pitfalls of our modern healthcare, and it doesn't have to be that way. So I think that it's really great to kind of have that like-minded approach to help empower people, especially women, because I think that we are just constant servants to our communities, to our families, to our partners, and remembering that we can't serve our best if you're, you know, pouring from an empty cup kind of thing. And so, yeah. What's a little bit about the, I don't know how to pronounce it properly, but the concept of the digestive fire, because I think I've heard about it in past podcast where they just kind of describe like dampness and different things like that, right? So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So the term Agni, A-G-N-I, is used to refer, it's one of the ways that it's used to refer to this concept of digestive fire. And the idea here is that our digestive system is basically like an internal fireplace. This is where things go to get torched, that they can get assimilated into our bodies, right? So that those nutrients can get distributed to where they need to go. And so there's a whole process that goes on, but the criticality of the digestive fire is that if our digestive fire is weak, we are not able to process the food that we're taking in a way that optimizes that food and the nutrients in that food getting sent where they need to go in our bodies. And you know, one of the components of that is why people take like digestive enzymes, or why they take maybe sometimes ginger before they eat, or why it's good to have warm water maybe before you eat. We want to keep that fire lit. We want to keep it going so that I can kind of churn and do what it needs to do for our bodies. And so things like cold drinks, those definitely have an impact on our digestive system. We want to, again, keep everything in there warm. We don't want to keep it too warm, of course, because we also don't want to create a system where we're just actually torching our digestive
literally
system. And you'll know that because sometimes it will, your body will tell you, and you might have something like diarrhea, and you're like, oh, maybe too much heat in my body. But generally speaking, we just want to keep that kind of fire going so that the body can do what it needs to do and the nutrients can go where they need to go. And so there's like this concept of toxic buildup as well. And if you think of like, you know, any sort of pipes in your home over time, if they're not cleaned out, if they're not getting kind of the cleansing that they need, toxic sludge builds up, and that toxic sludge can end up in different parts of your body that it's not supposed to be in. And that's where we start seeing health issues. So this concept of Agni is really, really critical, and there are different components to it. There's more detail, but that's kind of the general idea there, is that we want to keep this digestive fire strong.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's like the same context that other people who were trained in Ayurvedic medicine that I've listened to were kind of discussing that, because, you know, it's actually kind of wild, because do you remember when it was so popular to drink ice cold water because it was supposed to burn more calories? Did you ever know about that? No. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Like I would say when I was early mid 2000s, it was the thing to only have ice water because you supposedly burn more calories as your body's heating it up. And it's like the thermic effect of food is pretty negligible when it comes to trying to stimulate fat loss in the grand scheme. And so it's like, should we be focusing on that when it's probably causing digestive issues, you know? And I think an interesting thing that I discovered too with that same concept is like, if you are somebody who struggles with enzyme production, or, you know, or from the Ayurvedic perspective of more of the dampness or whatnot, that you should actually refrain from drinking water during that meal because it's going to dilute a lot of what is there, right? Have you found that as well?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It would be recommended to maybe have a little bit before you eat, preferably like outside of the 30-minute window, and then nothing while you're actually eating. It is disruptive to the digestive process. There are cases for some people who really have trouble for certain herbs to be, you know, like a hot tea that's very specific, for digestion. So maybe something like fennel, cumin, coriander tea, and to have that and sip, you know, small sips throughout your meal just to kind of keep things heated up, but not at the same time stripping, yes, all of that good, yummy stuff that we want to keep in totally. There, like stomach acid.
Yeah,
and-
yeah. Things that are, you know, the biggest part of the first stage of digestion. Well, actually, first stage is eating it, chomping it. Second stage of digestion. Yeah. It's like so funny being in my master's program right now. My brain is like all the things like when you're like digestive fire. I'm like, I'm in the nutritional biochemistry zone right now. And I'm like, all the electron transport chains.
It's, yeah, I definitely remember a few times feeling like, oh man, this is very sciencey.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Like I'm learning a lot of anatomy and physiology, which again is great. I think if we all had that kind of an education, maybe we would feel differently.
I know, you know, it always disappoints me how much I went through with having a degree in health and being like, why was this just not taught to us standardly? Like it should be part of undergraduate at least, you know, they make us take all these electives. It's like, you should have to take, you know, A&P, a basic A&P or something like that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you're doing it because now I know who to come to for all this.
I'm trying my hardest. It's so weird to get back in that headspace. It's like so much science, but it's great. I will always help you. Okay, so obviously there's so much to touch on with Ayurveda, but I do want to kind of ask before we kind of start to wrap up our chat today, that what are some like common misconceptions or misinformation around Ayurveda have you experienced, like especially as you have started your business and you know you're pitching this to more people and all that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that people don't really know is how rooted in science it actually is. Again, this isn't just kind of like something somebody thought up out of nowhere and it hasn't been tried and tested. It is such a sophisticated system of health and wellness. And I didn't even know that until I really started digging into it. You know, I always kind of understood and believed it on a high level. But once I started studying it in depth and understanding all the science involved, I really was kind of blown away by that. And especially considering, you know, it's been thousands of years that these things were discovered and practiced. So I think that's kind of one of the largest misconceptions, is that it's a little bit woo-woo or not rooted in something that's actually scientific. But the interesting thing now, I think, is there's been, and I know you've seen this shift with health and wellness and medicine more generally, where there's a little bit more openness to studying and bringing in some of these kind of more ancient or Eastern medicine practices, which again, some of these things are actually rooted in those practices. Some of the things in Western medicine are rooted in those practices, but there's actually research being done now to validate a lot of these things, which I think is super cool. So yeah, I would say that's one of the biggest misconceptions from my perspective. And then I think another one is that it's a linear process, or that there's an endpoint. Mm-hmm. But sorry, it doesn't work that way.
No health ever works that way.
It's, you know, to bring up the cliche of it's about the journey, not the destination. Like it really is. And it's not point A to point B. You're going to be doing all kinds of flips and twists and turns in the process. And it's a forever process. Because as long as you're breathing, you should be looking at all of these things and understanding the why behind the what. So I think, again, it's kind of like, no, it's not that you can just drink this tea and everything will be better. It really is a practice that takes time. It isn't going to be directly – it's not going to be immediate. You're not going to necessarily see the results on day two. Sometimes you do, but not always, especially for kind of more serious issues. And then I think the third misconception that I also think is really important to bring up is that Ayurveda discounts Western medicine. And even way back when, one of the most important things that some of these scholars and seers said was, this is just one way of doing things. And they, especially now with like a lot of the modern Ayurvedic scholars, absolutely, if Western medicine's necessary, 100% go for it. Like, get the help where you can get it. Maybe not necessarily always the first resort, and maybe second guess whether you actually need that surgery or whatever the thing is, the pill. Maybe there are other ways to go about it, but I would never, even for any of my clients, say like, stop taking this particular medication. Like, no, you should talk to your doctor about that. Of course, I would check contraindications for things that I prescribe. So it's really a process where we're working with your life and your lifestyle. And if you need to seek out Western medicine for something, or you already are, great, we'll work with that. So I think that's an important thing to bring up too, because I know there are kind of systems that discount certain types of medicine, or certain ways of medicating people, but Ayurveda is not one of those.
Yeah, that is a really, I think all three of those are really good distinctions, because I do hear people kind of misinformed and think that Ayurveda is adjacent to like homeopathy or something like that. And I mean, there's also great things about homeopathy, and I think there are things that it uses that are more Ayurvedic based, because obviously Ayurveda was one of the OG like bases of science of the body. But I do find that kind of the holistic world in general, people just really kind of, I think it's easy to say like unconventional medicine and conventional medicine, when in reality, you know, it's not that straightforward. And there's a lot of, you know, piggybacking off each other, working together, you know, like we had talked about before, like a wellness care team is important for that reason, because you want different brains that have different perspectives and approaches, because it is not a one size fits all thing with our health. And it isn't linear, you know, it is, you know, my favorite thing I've learned, especially as I've come into my 30s, is the discussion of, you know, your 20s are never something you should ever compare to or look back at or like have as a baseline, because now when you're in your 30s or your 40s or your 50s, you should not even be having any similar experience as that. I'd be concerned. You're like, please, no. But, you know, especially for the female body, because we very specifically go through hard milestones with perimenopause, menopause. Yeah. You know. So what definitely. I want to know also kind of what kind of mindset have you found to be like just the hardest to open up to Ayurvedic medicine or approaches?
As far as like people having a hard time.
If anybody's like challenged you on something, or if they don't understand the concepts.
I think, again, it's seen by a lot of people as pseudoscience. Like, it's been compared to things like astrology, which there is Vedic astrology as well, which is, again, a very sophisticated system that's been developed for a long time, and people believe it or don't believe it, to each their own. But I do think that is, again, one of the most challenging things for people to wrap their minds around. You know, there's a lot of discussion and practice around energetics and all these kind of layers in the body and where emotions travel and where the mind travels. And I think for a lot of people, if they can't see it or it hasn't been proven by Western science, then it's not real or it doesn't exist. And you know, that, again, to each their own, but that for me has been the thing that I've come up against the most, is that it's really not a respected way of healing because it's not Western science and medicine. Mm-hmm.
Valid. Yeah, I could totally see that. And I think I see that even with not even fully, I mean, just anything that lands in the holistic space, I think a lot of people are kind of like, meh. Like, I'll even have people that are like very afraid of like melatonin, but they'll like take Tylenol all day, every day. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of these things have been taken for like thousands of years and been proven to work. So it's like, okay, believe what you want to believe. But I guess coming from such an analytical background too, it's important for me to really understand and study something that's rooted in tried and true. And every time I pick something up, whether it's in a book or in a lecture, one of my teachers, I'm just like, this is blowing my mind. It's true. It really, again, a lot of it is just looking to nature and understanding the processes of nature. And so from my perspective, it's like, you can't really refute that. There are just natural orders of things. And if you start looking and understanding, it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. My body is earth. Like, my body is nature. I'm made up of the elements. But you know, that's, I believe it. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean someone else has to believe it. Yeah.
No, I know. I agree. And I mean, I believe it as well from my experiences, especially with nature and just wellness. But I think one of the things that I remember when I went and did a relief trip to Haiti back in 2013 and being immersed with people, especially in the countryside in Haiti, that like their life was pretty much survival mode, community, you know, the roots of humanity. And I remember coming back here and just reflecting and observing everything around me from like this really strange lens that I'd never seen before, where it was overwhelming how disconnected from spirit we are, you know, from our own spirits, you know, universe, whatever you want to call it. And it's so easy to question and reject a lot of these things until you have that experience where, you know, a lot of people call them like come to Jesus moments or a variety of different things. But even for, you know, like I've had some exes in the past that were really strong atheists or whatever, you know, any of those things. And I'd be like, you know, I think when you experience something that helps you see a whole different side to life and the experience, like it'll change the game for you. And one of them had a mushroom experience.
Yeah.
And was like, and like a mild mushroom, like not even that much psilocybin. And they're just like sitting on, they're like, I sat at a bench and I stared into the world and I was like, there's something greater than, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that, so it's like one of those things where I feel like if anyone listening to this is feeling skeptical or has any of those predispositions or narratives, like I think it is important to kind of just like feel like the freedom to open up to exploring it, because sometimes it is the way you can heal yourself and, you know, move forward more with your truest life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think also taking whatever it is from it that works for you. So I grew up in private schools and there was a discomfort I had at some point in my life with the concept of God, just because of the way that I had been exposed to that concept, what that concept meant, that I could or couldn't do, how I could or couldn't live. And when I started getting really steeped in some of my spiritual practices, I did come up against some of those edges as far as like, oh, well, I don't want to, God feels like weird for me. That makes me uncomfortable. And then it was like, you get more steeped in it and it's like, oh, okay, no, there's other ways to frame that. It can be spirit or source or like divine energy or just energy or whatever the thing is. And so I think also boxing ourselves into some of these things in ways that limit the way that we think about them or experience them can also close us off to so much, especially when it comes to the path that we take for our health and wellness. And so if there are some pieces of it that feel comfortable, take those. You don't have to take all of it, you know, like, mm-hmm. again, yeah. like Vedic astrology, I'm not there yet, but, but maybe one day I will be. So it's kind of like, you don't have to subscribe to the thing exactly the way that it's been said to do it. And I think that's also one of the beautiful things about like modern Ayurvedic practitioners, or most of them, at least that I've come into contact with. We understand that some of those texts and teachings just don't really necessarily work if we look at it in a black and white way in modern life. And I'm used to living in the gray as a lawyer. It's always like, it's really never yes or no. It's like, oh, it depends. So it's like, you know, take the gray, make it what you want and make it work for you. The idea here is that it should feel aligned and good for you. That's kind of the point. It doesn't need to be so prescriptive if that doesn't feel right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a similar phrase I've heard a lot more lately, especially kind of in that spiritual side of like, take what is for you and leave what isn't. And I think that is a really perfect way to kind of approach all different dimensions of health and ways that you can approach your own individual health. So I think that is a really, really perfect place to end our Ayurvedic chat on, even though we could continue for days. But but before we close out, two things. First one, I want to know a little bit about like how can our listeners connect with you, possibly work with you, and like where to find you, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I have a website, www.shikoriwellness.com. And I'm on Instagram as well at Shikori Wellness. I do take clients one-on-one virtually. And depending on kind of where people are, I do also have in-person events that I do. So there is something coming up in March for the new year for a lot of us, for nature. And it'll be kind of in celebration of spring equinox. So those are kind of two ways to get in touch and to work with me. There's information on the website.
Perfect. I love it. And I will always be putting all of those links in our show notes. So make sure to check those out if you would like to be there for any of those events or connect with Netta. But as we close out this beautiful conversation together today, I want to ask you, what is our traditional ending podcast question for our interviews? In what way, if any, do you find yourself a wellness rebel?
I would say the way that I'm a wellness rebel is by just saying no to the way that I was told to do things by so many people and allowing myself to understand and internalize and move forward with wellness in the way that serves me and my unique individual body, mind, spirit.
Absolutely. I think even from everything I've heard of from your mouth or from the families is that you've always been the rebel in the family.
So yes.
It is quite serendipitous that we're able to have you on Rebel Wellness. But thank you so much, Netta, for being here with us today. And again, for everyone listening, connect with Netta through our show notes and on Instagram and through her website. And that wraps up today's conversation. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you again, Netta, for being here.
Thank you, Kaylee. This was beautiful.
What did you think about that episode? If you enjoyed it, I hope that you would come join my community on Instagram at Rebel Wellness Podcast or my coaching page at Kaylee Loren or both. I would love to see your name pop up on my new follows list. I might say hello if I catch you. And I would also like to invite you to come check out my website, coachkales.com, if you're interested in seeing any more of the educational learning resources I have created for you. I have a whole ton of amazing free downloads that you can like dip your toe in the water of what working with me looks like. And if you are really vibing with what I have to say and how I teach it, come explore my courses that are available for purchase. They are all do-it-yourself In the near future, I plan to have some awesome group coaching that will be all live, so stay tuned for that. And the best way to know when I'm going to launch those is through my monthly wellness newsletter, which is my hand-curated, not AI-generated, monthly all things health and wellness newsletter that I created to be your new favorite resource for staying up to date with the latest in the health world, self-care resources that I've created, and a bunch of the clean beauty picks that I personally use myself and a whole lot more, as well as early access and discounts to anything that I create in the future for specifically my newsletter signup. So if you'd like to sign up, head to coachkales.com and add yourself to my mailing list. Last but not least, I would absolutely love it if you would help our podcast grow by simply sharing a rating or review wherever you stream and are listening to me right now, and share it on your social medias or text it to some friends or family members if this episode resonated and was something that you think could help somebody else, because I really would love to help anybody in your circle if I've been helping you. So I absolutely am so grateful that you're here. And if you listened all the way through, you are a real one. So all right, Rebel, until next episode.